Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Santana swats one deep right field and long gone. Jason Kipnis rocks one at deep right center field. Buxton back looking up. Gone. Oh, Edwin. He just launched one high and deep and gone. Austin lifts one in the air to deep left field. Backers Rosario. It is gone.
Looked like maybe it was going to be a frustrating. We were stranded runners. We had guys on, didn't cash in. And then our offense clicked in and we got the homers, and then we spread it out. That's a good way to play.
See, strike called on Kinsler, who was 0-for-2 in this game. He is not happy at all with Angel Hernandez. And he hadn't been happy since the opening tip tonight. Kinsler looks at a ball outside, 1-1, and now he's been thrown out of the game. How about that? Wow. Angel Hernandez apparently has had enough of Kinsler. He's thrown him out mid at bat.
The Tigers second baseman telling reporters tonight he wants Major League Baseball to better evaluate umpires. Here's what he told reporters. I said, you need to reevaluate your life, man. Just go home right now. Get out of the game. Just leave the game alone, please. Kinsler said Hernandez is blatantly changing the game. He kept going. Candidly, leave the game, he told the 20-year vet. No one wants you behind the plate anymore. Kinsler said he expects a fine, could even get a suspension, but he was happy to stand up for an issue he says is against an umpire a lot of players have complained about for a year.
Zeke. I talk to his family more often than Zeke. We all want what's best for him. I worry about him. I worry about the fact that I don't know all the stories about the accusations, but I'm always warning our team about that. When you become that kind of person, you have to really be cautious who you're around and who you're with, and I just worry about it.
If the punishment is reduced, some people might look at it in the court of public perception as a bungled situation by the NFL, which wouldn't be the first time. So I think it's going to be difficult for Zeke Elliott to have this suspension overturned, reduced perhaps, but it sure seems like the Cowboys should be playing for 6 weeks of life without Zeke.
He's going to land shots because with this fight, I'm going straight ahead. Normally, it's more taking my time, being very cautious, but this time, I'm going straight ahead.
You're giving him a handicap?
The fans deserve it.
Really?
And the after party is going to be at my strip club.
Do you genuinely dislike Conor McGregor?
Yes. I don't like him at all.
I just didn't like when he called us monkeys. I think that was totally disrespect.
Boy, I know he said boy. I didn't hear
monkeys. Yeah, he called us monkeys. I didn't like it.
He knows there's no racism on from me. His father knows. Ellerby knows. Ask these people. He said I labeled him a monkey. I never once in my life labeled him or any African American a monkey, and it annoys me that he's even bringing this type of stuff up. Like I said, if I was to label him after any animal, it would be the rat or the weasel, because that's a rat and a weasel move, trying to manipulate someone's words and try and create something that's not even there, and such a sensitive subject. I mean, he's a man that beats his wife.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Holy cow, is there a lot to unpack there in that montage? Welcome to the extravaganza. Mike, I'm not kidding. Woo. Right here on ESPN 106.5, they figure where we are. Toledo's sports leader, hope you're having an outstanding day. Thanks very much for being with us. We always appreciate your attendance and your attention. Yeah, that's a lot. Hey, Kush.
Yes.
What, you want to run by that prediction for me again, the one that you made yesterday about what you see happening with 44-year-old Bartolo Colon going up against his former team, the Indians, after we did that little tribute to his longevity and his rotundity? It's not a word. I'm just making up a nicer way to say very, very heavy. You said something's going to happen last night, and I said, no, I think that Mel's going to happen. How'd that go?
Well, it looks like you were more correct on that one, though it felt like it, yeah. It wouldn't be at first.
Yeah. It felt like what were you going
to
say?
It felt like it to be at first on my end, because he got out of a bases loaded, nobody out jam. And I'm thinking, oh, there it is. Just watch. It's going to be a shutout from here. And, boy, I was glad to be wrong at the end of the day.
So, in other words, your prediction was...
That's story of my life with predictions right there.
Yeah. And I've made just as many stinkers like that. But I told you, did I not tell you when I made the prediction and you said that? I said, no, I see it going the other way. I really, really do. Because the Indians were really kind of clicking on all cylinders, or are clicking on all cylinders, maybe more fully than they have at any point this year. And they did go on a 7-game winning streak. They did have some really good runs, you know, numbers out of 10, 11, 12 games. And I don't have them all memorized, you know, but 8 out of 11 or 8 out of 12, that kind of thing. But this little run that they're on right now, having won 5 in a row last night, of course, going into it, it was 4. But I told you what I saw, that for the first time, it wasn't like, you know, the bats carrying a few poor pitching performances across the finish line to victory, or pitchers throwing 3-hit shutouts in order to help out a very moribund, underperforming offense that's not getting any hits. But all of the above were contributing and starting to really hit their strides. That's kind of how I felt about it. The pitchers, you know, obviously Corey Kluber, just ridiculous. And we talked about Salazar, who went last night. We talked about Bauer, who's been remarkably, a word that you just don't associate with Trevor Bauer, consistent.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about Mike Clevenger, who had a little bit of a bad start about 10 days ago, had some extended rest, came back and looked terrific. But the point, and Carrasco. But it wasn't just that. It was Edwin Encarnacion heating up. It was the acquisition of Jay Bruce, who came over hot from the Mets. You got all of these, you know, things happening at the same time for the first time in a long time. And I just felt like, no, I think Bartolo's in a little bit of trouble tonight. And 5 home runs later, you played the little montage of home runs. Sure enough, they're all kind of coming together. They're a little bit contagious, you know, in that they're feeding off of one another. One guy is riding high and other guys are just feeling that kind of groove and that kind of confidence. Yep. And picking up on it. And yeah, so now it is 5 in a row. And considering everybody else in the division lost, they gained ground on everybody. They are now 6 up on both the Twins and the Royals. And, of course, the Tigers and White Sox trailing the pack at 13 and 19 and a half back, respectively. So they've opened up a 6-game lead, which is the 1-2-3. I guess it's only the fourth best lead of the 6 divisions, because you do have a couple of runaways,
right,
like the Nationals and the Dodgers and the Astros. But anyway, they're starting to, I think, find it much
yeah,
more so than they really have from a full team effort. I think much more than they have at any point thus far this season.
And out of all 5 of those homers, of which 3 were off Cologne, the other 2 later in the game were off the Twins bullpen when it was still somewhat close, or actually, or tied as well.
Right.
My favorite one out of all of them, honestly, was the Kipnis one. Because if he in any way, shape, or form can get going, that would be honestly tremendous for the Indians. He's been hurt and or having, quite frankly, a horrid season.
Yeah.
It's just not been fun this year for Jason Kipnis. And if he can get going in any way, you know, you had Santana hit 2. Encarnacion almost hit 2, had it not been for an outstanding catch in center. If he can get going, Kipnis, that really ties a lot of the lineup together.
No question about it. He is enormous and will be down the stretch. Either he or, you know, Chisenhall, when Chisenhall comes back, which looks like it could be, you know, coming very soon, maybe playing some left field. You know, these guys who have, you know, Chisenhall has produced. Make no mistake about it.
Yeah.
He just has been injured.
He was the RBI Kipnis leader when he went on the DL.
But if you get Jay Bruce to produce the way, you know, they expect him to, considering how he was playing and the year he was having in New York, and how great he started out, if you get Encarnacion hot, which it looks like he's getting, you got Santana starting to produce at a level you know he's capable of. He hit those 2. And you get something either from Kipnis or Chisenhall or both. Then you know what? Lindor's consistent and steady. Ramirez is consistent and steady.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a real threat. I don't fear anybody in the American League, to be quite frank, anymore. Earlier in the season, in May and in June, looking at the Astros running away with the division the way they were in the West and the record of number of wins that they were putting up, my goodness, I have to admit, I kind of felt like, man, you know, this is the, that's the American League champion. That's who's going to the World Series. But I don't feel that. I don't fear that anymore.
Yeah, it had, and still to a small degree has that feeling of it's their year, just the way they've been playing. But when you get into those short series, the way some of their pitching has been lately, even Keuchel, who's had a couple of bad starts off the DL, which he was on for about a month, that makes you question things. You know, to add quick to your point too, in the most likely first-round scenario, because barring something really funky in the standings, it looks like we're going to get an Indians-Red Sox Division Series rematch. The only question is which ballpark it's going to start in this time. Honestly, I don't fear anybody on that Red Sox staff after Chris Sale, and that's in theory. He'll be matched up with Corey Kluber, so let's have at it in that one.
Yeah, and then it's just all, you know, it's a matter of... you know, who's on more that night, because Kluber will throw up zeros and so will Sale, and it'll be something special, no question about it. Okay, speaking of home runs, and like I said, there's a lot to unpack in that montage. The Kinsler versus Angel Hernandez umpire story, I will get to. I think it's very, very interesting. We're going to talk about that. Urban Meyer's concern for Ezekiel Elliott is legitimate and it's real. It doesn't sound like concern from somebody who doesn't think there's a problem there. It doesn't sound like concern from somebody who thinks, hey, the NFL's railroading this really great kid. Ezekiel Elliott is in some serious trouble if you listen to Urban Meyer talk about him. That means something to me. I want to talk about that in a bit. Also in the montage, you heard a little bit of the Mayweather and McGregor. Boy, do we need this right now. Do we really need accusations of racist, racial slurs from Mayweather against McGregor? McGregor fighting back and saying, no way, never happened. Do we need this right now at the place we are in as a country with everything that happened in Charlottesville, with athletes speaking out like LeBron James yesterday? Out at Cedar Point, by the way, for those who were there. And if you weren't, he was speaking out and ripping the president and talking about various issues regarding race and justice in America. I mean, you have a lot of stuff going on right now, and now we've got to deal with Mayweather, McGregor, and allegations. And I don't know who's right. I don't know who's wrong. I have an idea, but I don't know. We're gonna talk about that, too. But before we do any of the above, Kush, since we're talking about the Indians mashing yesterday against Bartolo Colon and then the Twins bullpen, five home runs, let's talk about home runs. And let's talk about what Giancarlo Stanton is doing. Giancarlo Stanton is now in striking distance of arguably becoming the greatest single-season home run hitter in history. Let me say that again. His 44 home runs on the season have him on a pace for 62. That would break Roger Maris's all-time single-season home run record. And if you're scoring at home, that is correct. I am calling Roger Maris's 61 home runs the single-season record. I do not acknowledge Sammy Sosa's steroid-tainted multiple 60-plus home run seasons. I do not acknowledge Mark McGwire's steroids-tainted 70 home run season. I do not acknowledge Barry Bonds' steroid-tainted 73 home run season. The only clean home run record that we know of belongs to Roger Maris. Giancarlo Stanton, who has never been tied to illegal performance-enhancing drugs. I want to say that clearly because it means so much to me. It really does. Before Alex Rodriguez got tied up in and exposed for and suspended for illegal performance-enhancing drugs, I was his biggest fan, even though a lot of people thought he was a jerk and cocky and pompous and this, that, and the other. Nobody liked him. I was his biggest fan because I thought, here comes a clean guy, a natural talent who's been mashing like this since his rookie season. If anybody can take the home run title that was stolen away from a legitimate champion like Hank Aaron, and then stolen and abducted and robbed by a cheat like Barry Bonds in terms of the all-time home run record? I said that would be Alex Rodriguez, and I want him to take that record back on behalf of clean ball players, take it back from one of the cheats, one of the great cheats of all time, in Barry Bonds. I mean, ideally, Hank would still have his record, but if Hank couldn't have it, let's at least put it in the hands of somebody who's clean, which I thought Alex Rodriguez was for a long period of time. Of course, we now know differently. So for this, and I will also say, excuse me, I've also been a massive Albert Pujols fan. Albert Pujols is one of my favorite hitters of his generation, and maybe of any generation, and he was on a run where it looked like, oh my gosh, depending on whether his age is accurate or not, there were some questions about that, this is a guy who could get up there into the sevens and maybe make some noise and potentially, you know, take that home run record back, again, from a steroid cheat like Barry Bonds. Love me some Albert Pujols, but lo and behold, he has fallen off like most players in their mid-30s to late-30s have. He is just, you know, he can't do it anymore. He can still hit some home runs here and there, very low average, and just is not the force that he once was. He's over 600. That's where it'll stop. So I don't really have any hope at this particular juncture in time. It's too early to talk about Mike Trout, who's got 190-some at the age of 26. It's too early to talk about Bryce Harper, who's got 150 at the age of 25. Way too early. You might be able to start talking about Giancarlo Stanton at some point, because I believe he's got somewhere in the neighborhood of, what, 252, I want to say? Giancarlo Stanton's age is a number that I don't know at the moment. I had it this morning, but I don't have it. Jim, if you have it, let me know. So the all-time career home run record, I can't say that it's going to be threatened anytime soon by a clean player who can put up those kinds of numbers for a long, long period of time and challenge it. But for the single season record, I sure as hell can do this. I can get behind and cheer and support Giancarlo Stanton, who's got his 44 and he's pacing for 62, and he's never, like Albert Pujols, like Jim Thome, another guy who hit over 600 home runs in his career, never been tied to the steroids era, never been accused, never showed up on a Mitchell report, never had a positive test, any of those things. I like me some Giancarlo Stanton, which is ironic, because earlier in the year, I was kind of critical of Giancarlo Stanton for signing that $325 million contract and having a very, very pedestrian type of season. That was in the first half. In the second half, since the All-Star break, he's had 18 home runs. And oh, by the way, if you're scoring it, Giancarlo Stanton is now one of just four players to hit 23 home runs in a 35-game span. The others being the aforementioned steroid cheats, Bonds, Sosa, and McGuire. Stanton, 23 in his last 35 games, is a remarkable statistic, and it's got him on pace for that 62, which I hope to God, and that's going to be really asking an awful lot, but I hope to God that a guy like Stanton can do it so that it at least takes that part of the home run record that has been abducted, stolen, by a steroid cheat named Barry Bonds. It takes that, and of course, passed. Roger Maris's number was passed by Bonds, McGuire and Sosa as well. But that can be reclaimed by somebody in the name of clean living. Well, clean living. Clean, you know, as a ball player in terms of PEDs, et cetera, et cetera. So let's hope that Giancarlo Stanton can do it. Fourth player in history, only Sosa and Bonds have more than 23 in those 35 games. So we will see exactly how hot Giancarlo Stanton can stay. That's important to me. Jim, did you find out how old he is?
Stanton?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what it was. Hang on, I got to go to that page.
All right, well, never mind. If you don't have it, it's fine, because I want to get to our stat of the day anyway. But that's what I'm looking at. I don't think there's a chance for the career thing.
He's 27, by the way.
He's 27.
Yep.
And he's got, what, about 250 home runs, 252 home runs?
252.
I did have that right.
Yes, okay. You did.
So 252 at age 27. I mentioned Trout. Has around 191 at age 26. Harper has 150 at age 25. These guys are going to be, you know, close to the pace. You know, if Harper hits 40-plus a year for the next couple of years. He'll be pushing up on the same kind of a thing, 250 or so by age 27, and you might have some things that 10 years from now we'll be able to look at and see if they can catch Barry Bonds. But for now, all we can do is hope for the single-season record to go to somebody clean like Giancarlo Stanton. So that's what I'm hoping to see. All right, here's what we got. I want to get a quick timeout here after we give you our wild stat of the day. Then I want to open up the phone lines to a couple of things. Number one, I want to talk about Ian Kinsler, and I want to talk about the American League Central race as well. First of all, Ian Kinsler, is this wise to go as far as he did in criticizing home plate umpire Angel Hernandez yesterday, knowing full well that it's not just about this time and this fine, it's about never getting a fair shake again. And perhaps never getting a fair shake from Hernandez or anybody else who was a friend of his on umpire in the umpires union, whenever the Tigers are borderline. That is a very, very dangerous thing. I loved what I heard Kinsler say. I question the wisdom that it took for him to say it. I want to get your thoughts on that. We're going to talk more about the American League Central and about where the Indians are. No question about that as well. I want to talk about Urban Meyer really, really kind of sounding very concerned about Ezekiel Elliott and whether or not this guy is, let's just say if he is going to be mentally, emotionally, physically healthy enough to develop, grow, and have the type of career his ability gives him, or whether or not he is going to be in some trouble. Because I think Urban Meyer's warning signs for Ezekiel Elliott were there. I want to talk about that. And then Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather as well, as promised. All right, but right now let's get a quick timeout after we tell you about Buffalo Wild Wings in our stat of the day.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Trevor Bauer of the Indians struck out 10 twins last night in another strong pitching outing. And that wasn't last night. Was that was a couple nights ago.
I probably meant to say Salazar.
Salazar. Yeah, come
Bauer
on now.
Bauer was 2 nights ago with 11.
Yeah, you're killing me here, Kush. Salazar, the Indians starting off this month of August, have not only pitched well, it's been a strikeout machine, that rotation. In the 13 games that the Indians have played in the month of August, the starters have 6 10-plus strikeout games, while the staff as a whole has spanned 10 or more in 12 consecutive games. For perspective, the Indians' hitters have only struck out 10 or more times in 4 of those 13 games. So the rotation, indeed, has been a strikeout machine. That is your Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day. We got a Sports Center coming your way. Then we're going to get some phone calls and a couple of other issues right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Buddy, 338, I'm rolling onward, are we, on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Phone lines open now at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. Briefly on Ian Kinsler, Kush. I loved what that, can you play that again, Jim, from the montage so people know exactly what happened yesterday as Kinsler was thrown out for arguing Brad Ausmus, arguing balls and strikes, Brad Ausmus shortly after that. Play the Kinsler part again if you could, you know, from the play-by-play, and then the description of what happened between Kinsler and Angel Hernandez.
All right, yeah, give me a second. I'm just queuing that up. Hang on.
All right, yeah, I want to hear. I just want people to understand.
Kinsler, who was 0-for-2 in this game, he is not happy at all with Angel Hernandez. And he hadn't been happy since the opening tip tonight. Kinsler looks at a ball outside 1-1, and now he's been thrown out of the game. How about that? Wow. Angel Hernandez apparently has had enough of Kinsler. He's thrown him out mid at bat.
The Tigers' second baseman telling reporters tonight he wants Major League Baseball to better evaluate umpires. Here's what he told reporters. I said, you need to reevaluate your life, man. Just go home right now. Get out of the game. Just leave the game alone, please. Kinsler said Hernandez is blatantly changing the game. He kept going. Candidly, leave the game, he told the 20-year vet. No one wants you behind the plate anymore. Kinsler said he expects a fine, could even get a suspension, but he was happy to stand up for an issue he says is against an umpire a lot of players have complained about for a year.
I have no doubt that a lot of players have complained about it for a year. I have no doubt that he finally lost his cool with it and suggested that Hernandez should get another job. He is messing with games blatantly. I have no doubt he feels that way, and he might even be right. I don't watch enough baseball games and know who the home plate umpire is to say I've given a critical look or taken a critical look at the performance of Angel Hernandez. I don't know about you, Jim, but I haven't had a chance to grade umpires recently.
Right, me either.
But
I've been
trying
to look for that exact thing now.
But, yeah, right now. I mean, you know, we've all seen various things, like with guys like Joe West and others. There have been a lot of guys who have, you know, magnets for controversy and criticism various reasons.
That's gone on as long as there's been baseball.
Yeah, there are some guys that are worse than others and are well known as such. But I don't know that I've ever heard as personal of an attack as I did from Kinsler here. For him to say, you know, he needs to get another job, nobody even wants you behind the plate, you're a joke, blah, blah, blah. I mean, and again, here's a little quote from the Free Press talking about Kinsler. I didn't even cuss at him, talking about when he got tossed. He said, what about that one? After the next pitch was far outside, he asked Hernandez, what about that one? And that's when he got thrown out.
Yep.
He said, I didn't cuss at him. You need to reevaluate your life, I said. Just go home now. Get out of the game. Just leave the game alone, please. Kinsler spoke honestly without any regard for fine and suspension and was asked multiple times if the quotes were for the record. Sure, he said. If I get fined for saying the truth, then so be it. He's messing with baseball games, blatantly. Now, Kinsler, as we know, is not some little puppy. This isn't his first rodeo. He's an 11-year veteran, one of the more respected guys in the game. And he unloaded from that perspective as a longtime pro who knows all of the umpires, probably on a pretty good basis. He unloaded on Hernandez's performance saying, quote, it has to do with changing the game. He's changing the game. He needs to find another job. He really does. I'm just saying it's pretty obvious that he needs to stop ruining baseball games and, candidly, leave the game. No one wants you here behind the plate anymore. No one in this game wants you behind the plate anymore. None of the players. And that's a pretty broad statement, obviously. The comments will resonate likely with his playing brethren who have long complained about Hernandez's on-field performance. Again, this is quoting from the Free Press. One American League executive who requested anonymity because he was not authorized to speak publicly about umpires' performances said Kinsler's comments. He said what 90% of every other player thinks. Wow, that is a broad statement, and some saying that's accurate. Hernandez is 55. He's been an umpire since 1991. That's a long time. It's a lot of service. Last month, he filed a lawsuit against Rob Manfred, the commissioner, alleging racial discrimination in baseball's promotion and postseason assignment politics. All right, I don't want to get into all of that. I want to stay with Kinsler, who went on to say arguing with umpires is part of the game. That's just part of the game. They're not perfect, and we all know that. And if they're trying hard to do well, then they at least have the respect of the players. But when an umpire is blatantly missing calls, blatantly, not like, oh, that could have been a strike, or the guy caught it well, or visually it looks like a strike and he just missed it, well, then it's blatant. Like a number of calls yesterday, probably 8 pitches that were thrown that were not and some right down the middle, they were called balls. Kinsler stressed multiple times that despite an incident during his rookie season with the Rangers, he has no personal problem with Hernandez. I don't know his thinking, but I don't think he was calling a strike on me just to get me, because he was doing it to everybody. The incident in question, according to the Free Press, Anthony Fennec, who we need to talk to, the incident in question happened in 2006. After a slow roller to second base, Kinsler flipped the ball to first base, beating the runner by 3 steps, and Hernandez called him out. When I came back out for the next defensive inning, he started screaming at me, in my recollection of the event, for no reason, basically belittling me, telling me rookie this, rookie that, because I got in his way of making a call at first base. Because when I flipped the ball, supposedly I ran into his line of vision. I'm the one playing the game. It's your job to figure out where to go to get a view of that play. I'm not going to worry about flipping that ball and then getting out of the umpire's way. I didn't know what to do. I was a rookie. I have no clue what to do. The guy's yelling at me, and I don't even really know what for. So he's going back a long ways here with his history with Angel Hernandez. And I guess my question is he says he's ready to face a fine. He says he's even okay after the criticism of the balls and strikes about a suspension. He's okay with that. But what I want to know, is this the wise thing to do long term? When you are, you know, I guess it doesn't matter really what team you play for, but I'm just kind of focusing on it because it is the Tigers. You're never going to get another call again from this guy. You know, it will start to become personal. it will start to become, screw you, you SOB, after all the things you said about me. Nobody wants me behind the plate. I should go get another job, blah, blah, blah. This isn't just criticizing balls and strikes. This is criticizing my personal profession, my professionalism, my line of work, my chosen profession. That's going to cost him, and it's going to cost probably his team, I think probably for a long time to come. I don't know if the 1996 incident is affecting him, excuse me, the 2006 incident is affecting him in 2017. I don't know that for a sure or for a fact. But what I do know is that if there is some animosity, then what do you think, what animosity do you think Hernandez is going to hold for him in the wake of all of this? They're not going to boot him. He's been a major league umpire since 1991. So he's not going anywhere. You still have to deal with him. And what I really want to know, is not how the other players feel about him, talking about Hernandez. And oh, by the way, in a 2010 baseball survey, player survey, conducted by ESPN, 22% of those polled counted Hernandez as baseball's worst umpire. 22%, that's a pretty good number of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of guys. That's pretty amazing. But I want to know how the other umpires feel about it. Do the other umpires have his back, or are the other umpires of the same mindset as these players are? Because if they do have his back as a member of the union, as friends of him in the umpiring union, you're not going to get calls from anybody again. Because this is some of the worst criticism I've heard from a player about an umpire in a personal manner. Not just, he missed it, oh my God, it was a terrible call, but you shouldn't be here. The personal insults, the personal, you know, statements made by Kinsler here, and then backing it up was Ausmus, who got run as well. You just wonder if this isn't going to be something where the short-term gain, which means feeling good in the moment as you rip this guy, knowing it's probably going to lead to a suspension and or a fine or both, if the short-term gain is worth the long-term pain. Because I don't know that it's necessarily a good idea to do this to a Ed Hockley on a football field, or an Angel Hernandez on a baseball field, or I don't know, who's one of the more famous referees in basketball, Kush?
Oh, jeez.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
About the old guy that Charles Barkley raced. Anyway.
Wasn't that Dick Pavetta?
That's it. That's what I was saying. You're not going to get, you know, long term, you're not going to gain anything by taking personal close shots at guys like that. And I just wonder if this isn't something that Kinsler wishes he had back.
You know, it is weird in that sense, because I kind of agree with part of what you're saying, that in the short term, I kind of like it. You know, it's very rare that you get a player that really straightforward about it. And you know,
and it's not even out of anger. You know, it's rare that you'll get somebody so angry that they go off on something.
Yeah.
It's measured.
It's measured, reasoned.
It's been bothered. It's calm. It's Kinsler explaining this to the media in a way that lets you know that he's not just heat of the moment angry.
Mm-hmm.
He's well thought out, and I hate this guy as a Major League Baseball umpire. I wish he wasn't here. He needs to be in another career. He's ruining games. And he's doing it blatantly and intentionally. Those are some very personal remarks you just don't hear very often.
And according to Kinsler himself, Angel Hernandez specifically, according to Kinsler, it stems back to that incident that you just read in that Free Press article about it from when he was a rookie with the Rangers back in 06. And, you know, we like to joke here when
well, sometimes he's not sure of that. He's not sure of that. I mean, as I read it, Jim, unless you read it a different count of it, as I read it in the Free Press, Kinsler stressed multiple times that despite the incident during his rookie season with the Rangers, he has no personal problem with Hernandez. He's not sure if this has anything to do with the way he called balls and strikes, especially because he said, this isn't about me. He said he's doing it to everybody. He said 8 to 10 pitches that should have been called balls that weren't, and just as many that should have been called strikes that weren't. He's saying he's doing it to lots of guys and changing the outcomes of games. So I don't know necessarily that it's a personal thing, but if it is.
I don't think it is either. I think that's what allowed him to sound more or less more calm.
But he made
it
very personal.
Even though it sounds very personal, he was calmer while talking about it, not completely unhinged. I think it stems from the fact that from Kinsler's individual point of view, he's had issues with him going back to the beginning of his career.
Yeah.
Again, even though he's stressing, you know, this is a lot of people, and then you read the number. I'd love to see the full list of that, by the way. And I'm trying to look.
22% is back in 2010. Well, it's probably an anonymous survey.
Right.
Do you mean a full list of the other umpires?
Right. Where the other umpires rank from that players list? I'm trying to find it.
22% they say identified Hernandez as the worst umpire in the game. So,
but you know, just from that little incident, if what Kinsler, I'm just spitballing here as somebody who, you know, whenever occasionally I'll have those guys and you guys like to, you know, pick on me for ruining young kids' careers, but if that story is true, I'm just, you know, throwing this out there. If that story from Kinsler said is true, then yeah, that is on Angel Hernandez. You're going to have guys, if you're trying to make those calls at first or something, you're going to eventually, at some point, because baseball's funky like that. You know, you never know where the ball's going to bounce, et cetera, and so on. Yeah, you got to adjust your position, not go screaming at the rookie, allegedly, for getting in your way. He's got to play the game. You have to still find your spot, even if it's not the normal textbook spot, because maybe your vision is blocked. You got to adjust to get the call right. So he shouldn't have been, if Kinsler's story is true, then Hernandez was way out of line in that particular incident.
Oh, yeah. No question about it. But again, the odds are it's not necessarily that has led to this because of 22% of the players, et cetera, all of those other reasons. I just wonder if it's wise to poke the bear.
Right.
As it were.
And I was just getting to that. The other part of it is no. It is not wise because in the future there will be those things against you.
And you're going to get a call against you that you thought you'd never, you know, one that's so blatant and bad that you thought you'd never have to endure.
Exactly.
And you will have brought it on yourself.
And you know what a perfect example? And Indians fans of the mid-90s, you'll remember this. Joe Brinkman. Remember when, I think it was 98 against Boston, and like three pitches into the game, he throws out Dwight Gooden and Hargrove
on
pitches that, when you look at the replays, are blatantly strikes.
I do remember that.
That was tension, because the Indians and the Indians brass had issues in those days with Brinkman, I think personally, stemming back to the 95 Game 6 against Atlanta. I'm not taking anything away from Tom Glavine, but
no, I got
that plate got a little extended, and the Indians were public in some ways after that about Brinkman, and he eventually held a grudge, and it came to a head in that 98 game. So in the long run, no, it wasn't a wise thing, because Kinsler specifically, and whoever he's playing for by extension, probably won't get calls the next time Hernandez is in that position.
It's going to cost him
in
a moment
that
he cannot afford to cost him.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so just kind of a little blurb about the kid. I love the story as a sports talk host.
Yes.
I love the story because it's classic material. It's just tremendous, you know, the real dressing down of Hernandez. But I just talk about it from a common sense, big picture story as opposed to short-term, feel good, rip the guy, I'll pay my fine, I don't care, as long as I got that off my chest, I feel better.
At least fined in the coming days.
I have
to believe the Major League Baseball will not let a player say those.
And he won't care
about
that.
He's got enough money.
Right, he's got enough money. He won't care about that at all. He'll say, I feel good. It was worth the money to get that off of my chest and say what I wanted to say. But it will not feel so good the next time he needs a call in a crucial moment. You know, maybe his team is in a pennant race or something, and this guy, Angel Hernandez, is going to hold a grudge. And he very well may. That's the problem. You don't want to have that happen later on. So that's just where we are with Kinsler. Hey, real quick, one other baseball story that is not specific to the Indians or the Tigers or anything that we watch closely. Here in Northwest Ohio. This is actually all the way out from Los Altos, California. Kush, I often talk when I do radio, whether I'm talking about sports or news or politics or something else. I talk about society. I talk about kids. I talk about the demasculinization or emasculinization is what it would actually be to take somebody's masculinity away from them. Of the millennial generation, the wussification of America, the, oh my gosh, you hurt my feelings, I deserve some sort of recompense. Oh my God, you're not allowed to say that, it triggered me and I need a safe space to protect myself. We talk about these things, right? Societal things. Los Altos High School, a former baseball player has filed a lawsuit against the school district and against his former coach for hundreds of thousands of dollars. Well, specifically $150,000. Why? Because the coach didn't play him enough. And that was bullying. According to the suit, this is one of those wussification of America stories, I'm sorry. And the fact that it's going to work its way through the legal system, the court system, it's going to suck up resources. It's going to cost bench time. It's going to cost court time. It's going to push other things back on the docket that belong there. This is how and why it's called tort reform is so needed in this country to throw out frivolous lawsuits. But here's the story. According to the suit, the head varsity baseball coach out at Los Altos, Gabriel Lopez, repeatedly refused to let 17-year-old Robbie Lopez, no relation, play in his senior year. The suit claims this constitutes harassment and bullying because he really, really wanted to play, and he wasn't allowed. Therefore, his feelings were hurt, and he was bullied. Hacienda La Puente Unified Athletic Director Andrew Formano and Assistant Superintendent of Human Services Jill Rojas said they could not comment on the matter. Gabriel Lopez is not speaking on the matter yet either. But among the incidents in the lawsuit that were released to the press include an event in the annual alumni game in which the varsity team plays against former Los Altos players. It states that the game is supposed to be a fun day, especially for seniors on the team, and that every senior on the team played that day except for Robbie. The boy's father, Robert Lopez II, believed the coach's decision to bench his son throughout the season was because he complained to the district's athletic director after a disagreement over a fundraising game. Lopez spoke to the school after the coach did not allow players to practice who had not participated in the fundraising event. It is illegal in California to require students to fundraise to participate in public school activities. So he said the lawsuit also claimed the teenager had been a starter for 3 years prior to Coach Lopez being hired. Now, do you have any idea how many times this kind of thing happens in high schools across the country? Do you have any idea how many times coaching changes are made and players who were starters on one under one coach suddenly aren't necessarily the favorites of the new coach who's got a different idea, different mindset, a different type of athlete that he likes, etc.? If everybody filed a lawsuit because they got benched by the new coach because they didn't get a chance to play as much as they wanted to, honestly, our court system would never, I mean, we'd never see the light of day. Crying out loud, I know athletes who have had this happen to them. But this is society in 2017, and it's sports society in 2017. Everybody gets a participation ribbon in a contest for kids or a participation trophy. Nobody keeps score because everyone's a winner. Yay! All that matters is if you had enough fun. What's the score? We don't care. We had fun. When you get that mentality being kind of groomed and fostered and grown inside of young kids, by the time they get to high school and they really, you know, are starting to get competitive, if they don't get what they want, I'm not having as much fun, Dad. Coach won't play me. Now we're filing lawsuits. Enough of that trash. All I can say, enough of this kind of garbage. This isn't the only case of its kind. There are others like this in which a cheerleader, for example, at a South Carolina school claims she was bullied by her coach because she didn't look good enough for the team. So she filed a lawsuit and won $100,000. If we continue this, honestly, sports society as we know it is going to change forever. Nobody is going to want to coach at the youth level, which is usually volunteer, you don't get paid at all, or at the high school level, in which case you might as well be volunteering because the pay is so small. If this is what's going to happen, if you're going to be sued by players that don't start for you, players that don't make your team, if they don't toss this kind of stuff, honestly, that's the end of youth sports. That's the beginning of the end of youth sports. So I just wanted to share that one with you because of the insanity of it all. All right, it is 3:59. So coming up here after the top of the hour, we got a Sports Center coming your way. We got a lot to talk about still right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. We're going to get back into baseball. We're going to get into the Zeke Elliott and Urban Meyer story, and we're also going to talk about Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather and whether or not you believe Floyd Mayweather's accusations that Conor McGregor used a very, very offensive racial slur, or Conor McGregor who denies it to the hilt, or if these two guys aren't just yanking your chain so that you will buy their fight. That's going to be part of our number two's discussions. But for now, by the way, I want to remind you about Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill's brand new location at the Franklin Park Mall. Have you been yet? It's all brand new inside the bar, the booths, the tables, the chairs, all of it. Authentic Mexican feel everywhere. Comfy lounge to kick back a few drinks in before the sitting down for dinner, if you like. Happy hour every single day, like now, 3 to 6 p.m. every single day, 7 days a week. Happy hour with insane drink specials, plus Taco Tuesdays every week. That was last night if you were in. Tacos are just a dollar. Don't forget the original location for Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill. That's on Dussel Drive in Maumee. But the new location is at Franklin Park. Now, it's not in the food court. It's on the Monroe Street side of Franklin Park Mall between JCPenney and Dillard's, directly across from Nick and Jimmy's. You enter from the outside, directly from the brand-new paved parking lot. That's Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill, now at the Franklin Park Mall. And we are back right after this with hour number two, coming up on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Santana swats one deep right field and long gone. Jason Kipnis rocks one at deep right center field. Buxton back looking up. Gone. Oh, Edwin. He just launched one high and deep and gone. Austin lifts one in the air to deep left field. Back is Rosario. It is gone.
Looked like maybe it was going to be a frustrating. We were stranded runners. We had guys on, didn't cash in. And then our offense clicked in and, you know, we got the homers and then we spread it out. That's a good way to play.
The strike called on Kinsler, who was 0-for-2 in this game. He is not happy at all with Angel Hernandez. And he hadn't been happy since the opening tip tonight. Kinsler looks at a ball outside 1-1, and now he's been thrown out of the game. How about that? Wow. Angel Hernandez apparently has had enough of Kinsler. He's thrown him out mid at bat.
The Tigers second baseman telling reporters tonight he wants Major League Baseball to better evaluate umpires. Here's what he told reporters. I said, you need to reevaluate your life, man. Just go home right now. Get out of the game. Just leave the game alone, please. Kinsler said Hernandez is blatantly changing the game. He kept going. Candidly, leave the game, he told the 20-year vet. No one wants you behind the plate anymore. Kinsler said he expects a fine, could even get a suspension, but he was happy to stand up for an issue he says is against an umpire a lot of players have complained about for a year.
He's going to land shots because with this fight, I'm going straight ahead. Normally, it's more taking my time, being very cautious, but this time, I'm going straight ahead.
You're giving them a handicap?
The fans deserve it.
Really?
And the after party is going to be at my strip club.
Do you genuinely dislike Conor McGregor?
Yes. I don't like him at all.
I just didn't like when he called us monkeys. I think that was totally disrespect.
Well, I know he said boy. I didn't hear
monkeys. Yeah, he called us monkey. I didn't like it.
He knows there's no racism from me. His father knows. Ellerby knows. Ask these people. He said I labeled him a monkey. I never once in my life labeled him or any African-American a monkey, and it annoys me that he's even bringing this type of stuff up. Like I said, if I was to label him after any animal, it would be the rat or the weasel, because that's a rat and a weasel move, trying to manipulate someone's words and try and create something that's not even there. And such a sensitive subject. I mean, he's a man that beats his wife.
I love Zeke. I talk to his family more often than Zeke. We all want what's best for him. I worry about him. I worry about the fact that I don't know all the stories about the accusations, but I'm always warning our team about that. When you become that kind of person, you have to really be cautious who you're around and who you're with, and I just worry about him.
If the punishment is reduced, some people might look at it in the court of public perception as a bungled situation by the NFL, which wouldn't be the first time. So I think it's going to be difficult for Zeke Elliott to have this suspension overturned, reduced perhaps, but it sure seems like the Cowboys should be playing for 6 weeks of life without Zeke.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
You know, I don't know what new evidence they're going to come up with. I don't know exactly what it is that the appeal is going to focus on, but I will tell you this, that if Roger Goodell is wrong, if the public statement that they made about the suspension of Ezekiel Elliott is inaccurate, the public statement that says that they have picture photographic evidence of the bruises that prove that she was beaten on multiple occasions over that 1 week span by Ezekiel Elliott, if they have evidence in the text messages and other digital correspondence amongst other people, If they don't have everything they say they have, Ezekiel Elliott is going to own part of the National Football League. That's all I can say. They must be pretty damned confident to issue a public statement saying this is what we have on him. He knows it. He's seen it. Our four independent investigators have seen it. Therefore, it's real. It's true. And if it's not, he has got a defamation of character lawsuit. Oh, my God, to beat the band. He has got a slander lawsuit that honestly, like I said, I can see him owning part of the National Football League. That's all I can say. So if Ezekiel Elliott is innocent of all these things and the NFL doesn't have everything they say they do, my goodness, we are in for a wild, wild ride. Hour number two is underway now, 12 minutes after 4 right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, we are Toledo sports leader. Let's talk a little bit about the NFL as we get into preseason week 2 action. And joining us now is Adam Stites, NFL contributor for the SB Nation NFL website. Adam, thanks so much for the time. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
Fantastic, my friend. Thanks for the time. What's your take on Ezekiel Elliott and Roger Goodell and the boys saying we don't need a court case, we don't need a prosecutor to press charges, we don't need a conviction. All we need is to investigate ourselves and decide whether or not you violated not the court of law, but our personal conduct policy as outlined in your contract and in everybody's contract by way of the collective bargaining agreement. What's your take?
It's consistent pretty much with the way they've handled a lot of investigations. You know, it hasn't always been the court of law that has decided how they hand down their punishments. It wasn't the case with Greg Hardy. It wasn't the case with Ray Rice. They pretty much made those decisions separate from those decisions, and they went through their own investigations
as well.
Exactly, yeah. And so they go through their own investigations, and they set a hard line stance, 6 games no matter what for domestic violence, and they're sticking with that. The question is whether or not their evidence is going to hold up when there's an independent arbitrator hearing the appeal. Their evidence is, pictures of bruises. They went to experts. Those bruises were, deemed consistent with the stories that she told. And so it really just comes down to a he said, she said kind of situation. And right now the NFL is leaning towards her side, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, and it's not just straight up he said, she said, if you don't have the corresponding physical evidence or the corroborative physical evidence, which would include those bruises. And according to what Goodell and the league said last week when they announced this on Friday is that we had independent doctors look at those bruises. We were able to adjust for time and age and consistency of the bruising and how those things can happen. And falling down a flight of stairs and some of the other things that they're saying she did and running into a door, very common excuses, even women to use when they don't want their man to actually be brought up on charges. They'll say, no, I was clumsy, I tripped, I fell, I ran into this or that. You know, they went more than just he said, she said. They said we got forensic analysis from experts who say those are beatings, not accidents.
Right, right, and it's going to come down to, the only really defense that comes up is that it doesn't seem like Elliott has any proof that he didn't do it. It's just they're going to bring her character into question. She sent texts to a friend talking about she could blackmail him with a sex tape, and I think they're gonna go that route. Which, I don't know how well that's gonna work. It seems like the NFL has their evidence and are leaning towards her side of the story.
Adam Stites is our guest. He writes about the NFL for SBNation.com. You wrote a piece today about the Twitter war. The statement from Joe Lockhart, NFL Executive Vice President of Communications, tweeted out today by Brian McCarthy, a PR guy from the NFL, stating, quote, over the past few days, we've received multiple reports of the NFLPA spreading derogatory information to the media about the victim in the Ezekiel Elliott discipline case. It's a common tactic to attempt to prove the innocence of the accused by discrediting the victim, in this case, Ms. Thompson. When coming forward to report such abuse, common or not, these tactics are shameful Efforts to shame and blame victims are what often prevent people from coming forward to report violence and or seek help in the first place. That was the NFL's statement today about the discrediting of the victim or the attempted discrediting of the victim. How did the NFLPA respond?
They basically said that they never, you know, spread any kind of information. They call that lies. They said the NFL is scooping to new lows by accusing the NFLPA of that. The reports that did come out that have those bits of information, victim shaming, if you want to call it that, are really snippets taken directly from the NFL's investigative reports. So, you know, whether or not the NFLPA is the way those sources got their hands on that report, it remains to be seen. But the NFLPA says it wasn't there, it wasn't on them, and they're accusing the NFL of, you know, trying to point the finger when it really, the information came from the NFL itself, really, as a source of information.
The back and forth continued then, with the NFLPA saying the public statement issued on behalf of every NFL owner is a lie. The NFLPA categorically denies the accusations made in this statement. And then the NFL responded once again, I got to go back and forth here and try to key. I'm actually tracking this from your story, so if you want to bail me out here and tell me the exact order of things here, the NFLPA made a statement that said the public statement issued on behalf of every owner is a lie. The NFLPA denies. We know the league office has a history of being exposed for his lack of credibility. Another example of the NFL's hypocrisy on display in an attempt to create a sideshow to distract from their own failings in dealing with such serious issues. They should be ashamed for stooping to new lows. Then they tweeted again asking the NFL, where are the receipts? What receipts are they speaking of?
I think they're referring to the fact that the NFL says that the NFLPA is leaking this information to spread, you know, derogatory information about the victim. And the NFLPA is saying, well, then prove it. You know, this information didn't come from us. If you have proof that this information came from us,
okay,
then let's see it. But I don't think you have it. But, you know, I think ultimately this little back and forth, I think it has Elliott's at the center of it, but ultimately this is just kind of a power struggle. Both these sides, it's very important for them, especially with CBA negotiations coming up in a few years, that they really, on something like player punishment, neither side wants to take a back step and really lose any kind of leverage in their negotiations. So they're both really, it's a power struggle more than anything. I think that we saw this reflected in the Deflategate investigation, you know, Adrian Peterson, Greg Hardy, any kind of these giant, big deal suspensions that go to lengthy appeals. I think we see both sides really try to dig their heels in and really stand for something and try and accuse the other side of, you know, manipulation.
Adam, would the NFLPA be willing to help clear somebody who is guilty that they might believe of such atrocious things as five beatings within a week or whatever the case might be that the NFL seems to have come to the conclusion happen? Would they be willing to take a serial abuser of women and champion him to get back on the field, to overturn the suspension on appeal, all to win that power struggle you're talking about when it comes to contract negotiations? Or do you think that they really truly believe he's innocent and that they're fighting the good fight here, not just the power struggle fight?
I don't know what their real thoughts are on his purported innocence, but I do believe that they would defend him regardless. I think that they're just kind of, it's important to them that they don't lose, a fight for the NFL's right to hand down player punishment. I think it's probably a little bit bigger in their eyes than just Elliott. So, I think, yeah, that they probably would champion him and defend him regardless, because they see it as bigger than that, and it's kind of just, you know, they are his attorneys in this kind of, if you want to compare it to a legal battle, they're his defenders, so that they're going to probably back him regardless of their thoughts on his innocence.
That's a very disturbing thing when we're talking about a league that relies on its fans for its revenue, that relies on the fans who watch on TV and who come to the stadiums and buy the gear, et cetera, et cetera. to support a serial abuser, if that is indeed what is the truth here, a serial abuser of women in such a way, all to further their, you know, their own power grab, if you will, against the owners. It's a very troubling thing to me. Bottom line, do you think he serves the full six? Do you think it is reduced to four on this appeal, or where does it go?
I wouldn't be surprised if it reduces to four, because the evidence there is probably circumstantial. It seems pretty strong, and I don't think his punishment gets wiped out entirely. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's reduced a little bit. My guess is that it sticks at six. It seems like the NFL made a decision that domestic violence did occur, and they've previously set a standard that six games is the punishment for that. So, you know, in previous times when the punishment was reduced, it was because there was no real standard and it was considered, overreach on the punishment. So I think six games probably sticks, but I wouldn't be shocked if it gets dropped a little bit. I would be floored if it got eliminated entirely.
Adam Stites is an NFL contributor for SB Nation, joining us with a little bit of NFL insight as we get ready for week two of the preseason. Jim Cushman is with us as well. Adam, he's got a question for you.
Yeah, swerving away from this whole story, which obviously is going to remain, the thing that caught my eye more than anything, because we're still, you know, going from preseason game one to preseason game number two, so unless you have a specific team with some, position battles, it's still preseason. But in a sport in football, in the NFL, you don't see a lot of big trades. I mean, we of course, on this show just a couple weeks ago got done having lots of shows basically on the MLB trade deadline. Not as much big trades in football, but I found one that happened late last week kind of interesting. The gist of it, of course, was two second-rounders to Buffalo for Sammy Watkins, a former kind of game changer. You know, the L.A. Rams are in an interesting position because now there's two teams in L.A., They weren't that good of a roster at all last year. And if this whole Jared Goff thing is going to work at all, and it so far doesn't look like it is, they're going to need some playmakers like a Sammy Watkins type. Does this help out Jared Goff at all, or does he just stink in a kind of way that would make Browns fans, you know, blush in terms of what the Rams did to pick him up last year? What can you tell us about how this is going to help, if at all, the Rams?
It should help. It seems like the Rams' entire plan right now is just find out if this guy is good, give him as much help as possible, and see if they can turn him into a winner. Because, you know, it's hard to say that they're building for the future when they're giving up a second round pick to get a Sammy Watkins and they're signing Andrew Whitworth, who's maybe got 2 years left in him. So they're definitely committing to figuring out right away if Jared Goff can play. And like you said, he definitely didn't look like it last year. He looked pretty terrible, but I think that was probably to be expected. He was an air raid quarterback. They didn't want to play him in the first place as a rookie. They kind of forced their hand when Case Keenum played terribly. They got to find out as soon as possible if this guy can play, and then try to move on if he can. So yeah, I think it probably helps him, but we'll see. My guess is that he's just not that player that they thought he was when they drafted him in the first place.
Adam, I want to talk about some of the teams closer to where we are. We cover, obviously, the Browns and the Lions more than anything else, a little bit to our east, a little bit to our north here in Northwest Ohio. Browns have a quarterback problem. Brock Osweiler was a starter in preseason game one. He is probably, I would imagine, going to be the game one starter in the regular season as well. While they bring DeShone Kizer along slowly, it would appear that Cody Kessler is the odd man out. He is not going to be really considered as a factor here. How do you think this thing should play out? How do you think DeShone Kizer eventually will be as an NFL starter?
I thought of all the rookie quarterbacks in the first week of preseason, and they all really performed well. It's hard to even find one that didn't. Maybe Joshua Dobbs, but everybody looked good. I thought DeShone Kizer outshined all of them. I thought he played
more than Trubisky.
Fantastic. I thought Kizer kept his eyes downfield, moving through the pocket was cleaner than anybody else. He made the throws downfield. I thought Kizer did everything you could possibly want out of a rookie quarterback to suggest that he's a guy of the future. He definitely threw a lot of interceptions in college, and so that'll probably be something to keep an eye on still. But, I think that you got to go with Kizer. You just know Brock Osweiler isn't your guy of the future. Whether or not he's your Band-Aid for now, there's no way you can think that he's your quarterback of the future.
No, I don't think the Browns, they do. I don't think they do, Adam. It's just a question of
right.
Is he that Band-Aid for now, or should they just go ahead right out of the gate and get, you know, Kizer's trial by fire?
Right, and I'm a believer in trial by fire. I don't think there's cases of quarterbacks where they failed because they went in too early. I think generally, if a guy fails, it's because he's not good. If a guy looks good early, he's probably good. And I think, you know, what are you waiting for with Kizer? It's not a situation where he has to take time to learn a brand new system like Patrick Mahomes, who comes from Texas Tech. Deshaun Kizer is about as close to ready as guys get. So, I think just what are you wasting your time with Osweiler for? You know you're a young team. You know you're not a Super Bowl contender right now. You're trying to find guys that are there for the future. Find out if you think that Kizer can be that guy. I think throw him in the fire early. Personally, that's what I would do.
You know, I certainly can understand that argument. I'm a little bit afraid of that, though. They don't have a lot of playmakers. Kenny Britt is their most, you know, experienced receiver, and he's not a playmaker. He's not a number one, typically speaking. Corey Coleman is a second-year guy who had a very underwhelming first year. He might evolve into a number one, but there aren't a lot of playmakers there. If you don't have a lot of playmakers, and you have a suspect offensive line, and you got guys running around Cameron or Irving to kill quarterbacks very easily, I fear that Kizer would actually be hurt. His development would be hurt as he runs for his life, and he has nobody really getting, a lot of open windows. It's going to cause some forced balls. It's going to cause some interceptions. It's going to cause some questions about his ability and maybe even his own self-confidence. And maybe if you let Brock Osweiler suffer through all of that nonsense while they develop receivers and weapons and an offensive line, then Kizer comes in just a little bit, in a little bit of a better position to succeed. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably comes down to a question of how good the Browns feel about their offense. There are definitely questions. They made efforts to upgrade, you know, up front. You know, they got Kevin Zeitler in there now, and you know, Joel Bitonio is a good guard. So they've made efforts to upgrade. You know, they added Kenny Britt. You know, so. Yeah, if they really feel like it's a disaster and they don't want to throw him into that fire. Personally, I think if a guy's confidence gets shaken and he shells up and struggles with dealing with that kind of adversity, I don't think that you want him to be your quarterback anyway. I think the top guys are the guys that can handle all that and keep on improving and getting better and handling those kind of situations. And yeah, the really truly special guys can get through that, and if you don't think Kizer is that, then you're probably wasting your time with him anyway.
We're talking to Adam Stites, NFL contributor for SBNation.com. Let's go up north of our state line to Detroit. Jim Cushion's got one for you there.
Yeah, and the Lions had a couple of injuries in their preseason opener. Brandon Copeland, linebacker, but big on special teams. Peck injury, so he's done for the year. And then you have the ACL tear for defensive end Kerry Hyder. And this isn't so much a Lions-specific question because it's football. You're going to have injuries. Some are worse than others, even in the preseason, of course. But, of course, as it seems to do every August, it leads to the question of, oh, it's the preseason and you got guys that are important guys for your team dropping like flies to the injury bug. There's got to be, you know, some way to help fix these kind of things. So I'm putting you on the spot, Adam. It's the proverbial August NFL question. What would you do about the preseason? Shorten it? Make sure certain guys don't play? How would you go about it? Because injuries are a part of the game, and it's unfortunate. And these two injuries for us, not like they're the only ones dealing with it. But how would you rectify the preseason, which we know everybody hates?
Yeah, I think maybe if you trim off, you know, 1 week, I don't think you need a Hall of Fame game, teams playing five games. But generally, I think it's just a situation that we kind of have to live with. You know, if you take away those too many preseason games, if you shrink it down to two, I think it just limits the opportunities for undrafted free agents and the unknown guys to prove that they deserve a spot. So, it's a problem. But like you said, guys just kind of get injured regardless. Practice, people get injured. You know, people get injured playing pickup basketball. It kind of just happens. And so, I don't know that it's a problem that can be fixed fully. Maybe little things could cause less injuries, but I think it just would inhibit the team's ability to find younger players and give those guys shots. So I think it's just a situation they kind of have to live with regardless.
Adam, you wrote today about Blake Bortles down in Jacksonville. And you say the Jaguars should operate as though their quarterback had suffered a season-ending injury, even though he hasn't. You've got to find a way to upgrade over him. He is not good enough. What do you suggest they do? And secondly, the most obvious question, you can't talk quarterbacks in the National Football League unless you talk about Colin Kaepernick. Is this something that could be a possibility to get him back into the league? And is it something you think that the Jacksonville fan base would get behind?
I would be surprised if the Jaguars signed him just because they've been so silent about it. There hasn't been much reason to suggest that they'd be a team interested in signing him. If they were, why would they do it now and not do it before?
Mm-hmm.
I think that the fan base would probably be split, but I think that's probably the case everywhere. And I think ultimately it would be a move that would make a lot of sense. I think he's better quarterback than Blake Bortles. If you think he's better than a few starters, you have to think he's better than Blake Bortles, because I think Blake Bortles is probably the worst starter in the NFL right now. So they got to do something about it. I think a trade would make sense. They were rumored to be one of the teams interested in AJ McCarron.
Right.
Maybe there's some other trades that would make sense. You know, you just talked about Cody Kessler kind of looking like the third guy out in Cleveland. Maybe go after a young backup like that, just to bring him in and try to find an upgrade, because I don't know how you can enter a season with that quarterback situation after spending all that money to go get Calais Campbell, to get AJ Bouye, to upgrade the team in so many different ways, and then stick with a guy who throws league-leading interceptions seemingly year in, year out.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. It is interesting when you called him the worst quarterback in the National Football League. I'm trying to think of who some of the other contenders for that ignominious title might be. Who's going to end up starting out in San Francisco, Kaepernick's old team that he walked away from?
Looks like it's Brian Hoyer's job to lose, and he would probably be in that argument for the bottom of the league. But Brian Hoyer,
go ahead. Who else?
Yeah, but Brian Hoyer, he's played decently well in his few situations. He had one kind of disastrous playoff game with the Texans, but he was played okay in the time before that. He played okay in his time in Cleveland before he got injured, and the same thing in Chicago last year. He's always been a guy who will probably give you more touchdowns than he does interceptions, and just kind of. He's not a dynamic quarterback, but he doesn't make too many mistakes, and I think you can live with him.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair to say, and Bortles very well may be, but I just, it's one of those things where, what about the Jets? I mean, who's going to end up starting for the Jets? Is it going to be Josh McCown? Where does he rank? He's got to be right there with Bortles, doesn't he?
He looked pretty dang good in their preseason game a few days ago. He only threw four passes and racked up like 80 yards and a touchdown. So, yeah, Josh McCown's a super up and down guy. He had the one year where he looked fantastic in Chicago, and then he just looked like a disaster the year after that. So maybe he's back to being good again. Who knows? But that's another guy where he's probably down there. But
Bortles. Jim Cushlin asked you before about Goff. Bortles versus Goff. You had a starter team right now. Which one do you take?
I'd probably take Goff just because there's upside there. You can try to develop that talent that made him the number one pick in the first place. I've given up on Bortles. You've seen 50 games or so of him. I think at this point you're probably being foolish hoping that you're going to see him all of a sudden become a top five guy. Goff, you've seen, six games so far? So I think there's still reason to be hopeful.
How about Mike Glennon?
Yeah, there's another guy. I mean, he just got a contract, so they must think there's something there. That's another guy you just haven't seen much of him on the field to have any idea. When you're picking between the bottom of the league and trying to debate whether or not he's the worst quarterback, it's probably a bad situation regardless.
Yeah, that's a very good point. There's no question about that. I just wonder because, you know, the whole Kaepernick story, I wonder where. Because I don't think Colin Kaepernick is ever going to be signed to be anybody's backup. No owner is going to want to bring that circus to town with everything that comes with it for a backup, just to be in the locker room and on the sideline in the event we need. If anybody brings him, it's going to be to play, and it's going to be to play now. The only way we're going to be willing to deal with the distractions and the baggage and all the crap that comes with it is if we think he's going to start for us and actually produce. That's just my personal opinion, so I'm looking for guys who are considered the worst in the league as starters. There might be landing spots. Otherwise, I think he stays out pretty much indefinitely. Really good stuff. We've got to run here. I don't want to keep too much longer. Thank you so much, Adam. Adam Stites writes about the NFL for SBNation.com and does it very, very well. Make sure you follow him there. Adam, thanks for your time this afternoon. We certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You got it. Have a great one. All right, there you go. Adam is out in Phoenix. Probably could have asked him about Carson Palmer, too.
Yeah.
How soon before Carson Palmer, hangs it up? He had a great season, MVP caliber 2 years ago. Last year, fell flat off the map, basically, and was injured, of course, too. But you could probably throw something. Oh, you know what else he did, Jim?
What?
Adam, that is. He wrote a piece that I forgot to ask him about Roberto Aguayo. How about that? Second-round draft pick a year ago. And he's cut. I mean, how often do you take a kicker in the top first, you know, two, three, four rounds, really, ever?
Right.
You just don't do that unless it's a surefire thing, a Hall of Famer. A Sebastian Janikowski has been doing it for, 16, 17 years in Oakland since he was a first-round draft pick out of Florida State.
I'm pretty sure that's the last kicker to go in the first round, of course,
too. Sounds about right. But Aguayo went in the second round and got cut after Friday's preseason struggles. After he missed a field goal and an extra point, I want to say, both. He just can't do it. They just released him. You talk about fan bases getting angry. How would you feel if your team, Kush, and I know you're a Browns fan, reached for a kicker in the second round and ended up having to cut him 23 months after?
Well, two answers to that, honestly, Bob. First, as a Browns fan, they screwed up an early round draft pick. Tell me something I don't know. In general, yeah, I'd be pretty mad. I mean, there's a reason that, and you point out Sebastian Janikowski almost 15 plus years ago at this point, outside of,
I think, 17 years ago. I think he was like a 2000 pick.
I forget. I know it's over 15. Yeah. I just don't remember exactly on, but yeah, he's been around seemingly now forever. Outside of those very rare cases, if you're going to take a kicker in the draft at all, you wait till at least round 5, because then this exact thing, can happen. So if I'm any team other than the Cleveland Browns, I'm furious right now. Of course, if I'm the Browns and a Browns fan, which I am, now, tell me something I don't know. They screwed up an early round draft pick.
You know how old Sebastian Janikowski is?
Is he 40?
He's 39.
Ah!
He's 39 years old. We were just talking about Cologne and a bunch of the other old timers.
Still
doing their thing. He's still doing his thing. By the way, he's built kind of like Bartolo Colon.
Yes, he did.
But he's still doing his thing. And doing it exceptionally well. That was a,
he will be 40 for next season
March, if he plays,
because his birthday's in March.
Yeah. But that's a guy, seriously, I mean, I'm not saying he, because he played on a lot of bad teams. They've just, they haven't been very good. But
right,
he himself has had a very, very solid career. Okay, let me get a quick timeout because we got a Sports Center coming your way. On the other side, we're going to talk about Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. The fight is 10 days away. Today is the 16th. It comes off on the 26th. Is Floyd Mayweather telling the truth when he accuses Conor McGregor of a very, very offensive racial slur? Or is he just trying to drum up more pay-per-view buys, making it look like a race war between a black guy and a white guy with serious, serious racial issues between them? Is he trying to drum up sales, or is he telling the truth? We'll tell you the story and get your thoughts on it, too, as we continue right after this on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Kushlin, I wanted to talk about Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. But a quick check of what's trending on Twitter right now. Number one is LeBron James. Multiple reports on Twitter from multiple sources, including the Sports Quotient, Slam Magazine, a number of others. Doug Gottlieb over at Fox saying LeBron James is 100% leaving the Cavaliers after the 2017-18 season. Slam Magazine reported it exactly that way. Sports Quotient says breaking, this is as of 40 minutes ago. This will be LeBron James' final season in Cleveland as his relationship with the owner is beyond repair, per Sheridan Hoops. Let's see. Doug Gottlieb says LeBron leaving Cleveland because Dan Gilbert supported Trump. That is completely believable. People are getting divorced over that election. Let's see. Cleveland 19 News, a TV station out in Cleveland, says LeBron leaving the Cavs after this season. Let's see. I'm just trying to look for other reputable sites and names other than just, you know, individual tweeters, you know, fans, etc. But multiple sources saying that it is official LeBron James is leaving Cleveland at the end of this season. At least one or two Cleveland sports reporters are saying, I hear that's garbage. Joe Varden, who covers the NBA for Cleveland.com, is on vacation. He says, for what it's worth, and damn it, I'm on vacation, but three sources close to LeBron said this latest tweet about him is 100% false. Another reporter out there in Cleveland says, I was told the Sheridan Hoop story on LeBron is speculation. Also, King James' relationship with Cavs Dan is beyond that it's beyond repair is false. But then again, like I said, multiple sources saying that this is indeed confirmed. It is official that he is out at the end of the season. You have any reaction to that question?
Well, my reaction is, nothing changes. I mean, tell me something I don't know in a twist away. Remember, we were just talking about this a little bit yesterday or the day before, and I remember saying, you know, if you're the Cavs, this is what you have to assume is going to happen. You have to assume that he's going to walk away for nothing at the end of this year. And I definitely phrase like that because remember it was maybe a month ago now where LeBron, through his people, said, no, I'm not waiving any no trade clause. I do intend to play for Cleveland this season. And he's one of the very few players in the NBA who has a full no trade clause. So on the one hand, we know he's there, unlike the whole Kyrie situation. We know he's there for this season. It's after that that's completely up in the air. But yeah, again, you still, if you're the Cavs front office, Gilbert, Altman, the rest, you have to go at everything on the assumption that he is leaving and be pleasantly surprised if for some reason he changes his mind and re-signs with the Cavs next summer.
So, yeah, I don't disagree with that.
As for all this speculation?
Yeah, you're talking about assumptions. Go on the assumption that he's leaving, and that's why, according to what we talked about yesterday,
right,
that according to multiple sources, the reason they have not had more serious discussions in trade talks for Kyrie Irving, you know, granting Kyrie Irving's, you know, trade demands, is because they haven't identified the right young talent that a team is willing to part with, especially since Kyrie Irving says he will not sign long-term with anybody, although a different report today said the Spurs would be a difference maker there. If the Spurs were able to work out a trade for Kyrie, he would sign long-term with the Spurs. But teams are reluctant to give up top young talent for Kyrie on a short-term, you know, 1 or 2 year situation. And the Cavs will only take superstar young talent for Kyrie because they believe LeBron is going to leave. That's all speculative. That's all assumptive. But now today, again, these reports are, it is official, citing people very close to LeBron James. Now, I don't know, you know, whether Sheridan Hoops is reliable or not. I don't know if the reporters out in Cleveland are more reliable than Sheridan Hoops and Yahoo Sports and others are. But you're getting two stories here. One says he is definitely out, and others saying that, no, that is a fallacious report. It's a false report. It's not something that is based in fact, and I'm just not sure what to make of it. I will tell you this. I believe it only because I believe the assumptions that you talked about. I believe it if somebody found out for a fact that he's gone or he plans to be gone at the end of the season,
mm-hmm.
I am more than willing to believe it because I have believed it for a long time. I believed it. That's one of the main reasons why Kyrie Irving wanted to leave, not because he wanted to branch out and be a team leader of his own instead of being in the shadow of LeBron James and so on, as it has been proclaimed. I think that he knew that LeBron James was going to leave, And if he stayed behind as the go-to guy here after LeBron James leaves, he is being asked to do the impossible, and that is keep the team going to the finals without LeBron. And when they fail to get to the finals without LeBron, he will be the scapegoat. He will be blamed. How come you can't get there? You think you're a superstar, but you're not. You always rode on LeBron's coattails, and he wants out of that situation ASAP. That means getting a trade now so that he can indeed start fresh with a new team where he won't be compared to what they had in Cleveland under LeBron James.
The other thing that I take away from this, Bob, is outside of anything that may happen on the basketball court for the Cavs in this season, and since LeBron will still be on the team and will not waive his no-trade clause during this season, the Cavs will be blatantly in contention to go back to the NBA Finals one last time. Out, the second story will be this sideshow all season long. Everybody just get your headache medicine ready.
Yeah, well, I've already got it. I mean, really, and it really is a headache, and it's really unfortunate that it comes down to this. But that is going to be how this quote-unquote, you know, fantastic title run and title chase and everything else that they've done over the last 3 years with three straight trips to the finals, that is going to be how this thing ends. Sad as it might be, that is going to be how this thing ends. So that's just the reality of the situation. As for the very last story, and I don't know how much time we have left here, Jim, but as for the last story of the day, and those were the comments that you played at the end of the montage from Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. That is something I weird.
I just didn't like when he called us monkeys. I think that was totally disrespect.
Well, I know he said boy. I didn't hear monkeys.
Yeah, he called us monkeys. I didn't like it.
He knows there's no racism from me. His father knows. Ellerby knows. Ask these people. He said I labeled him a monkey. I never once in my life labeled him or any African American a monkey, and it annoys me that he's even bringing this type of stuff up. Like,
Jim, we don't need this right now.
No.
In this country. We don't. With a look at the societal landscape the way that it is, with hate groups going at one another and all kinds of other terrible things going on, we don't need this right now. I watched the entire press tour that Mayweather and McGregor had with one another. And as Stephen A. Smith said to Floyd Mayweather in that clip you just heard, I heard him call you a boy, but I didn't hear anything like monkey. I didn't either.
Neither did I.
Conor McGregor says that's because it never happened. Do you think Floyd Mayweather would be making up such a terrible racial slur to attack Conor McGregor just to make this fight look that much more personal, to make it look that much more black versus white, the race war inside the ring to get more buys and more hundreds of millions of dollars for himself and to a lesser extent to Conor McGregor? Do you think he would lie about something like this at this particular point in time, making that up? There are very few things that you can call somebody in this day and age worse than a racist. There are very few things you can do. Because for a lot of people are just inclined to believe it because of the state of the country, as I said. A lot of people just inclined to believe it and believe the worst about Conor McGregor here. Do you think that Floyd Mayweather would do that to somebody just to make more money?
To a small degree, yes. Yes, I do. We kind of speculated on this exact thing when we were talking about that press tour, because yeah, it was on back-to-back days a couple weeks back. Like, this is what you got to do. This is what they've been doing in boxing and fight promotions since seemingly the dawn of time. It's just got more vulgar as time has gone on. So on some level, yes, I do believe that Mayweather would actually do that.
I will tell you this, unless it's on tape, unless it was recorded or witnessed by somebody else, I do too. I think the man goes by Money May. His brand is TMT, which is the money team. This is what it's all about for him. He wants this to be the biggest payday he ever got. He wants it to beat Manny Pacquiao, what he made for that fight, which is a couple hundred million dollars. He wants this to be $300-$350 million, whatever he can get on the back end of pay-per-view buys. And I think the sales for the fight are slow. It's 10 days from today.
Yeah.
And I think the sales for the fight are slow, and this is Floyd Mayweather.
We got to get the numbers on that one,
because
you may be
on.
And we got to find the numbers now that you mentioned that, because I got a hunch that you might be onto something here.
Yeah. And I think this is his way of making sure that he gets paid what he wants to get paid for this sideshow fight with Conor McGregor. All right, that's it. I wish I had more time for that. Maybe I don't, because it would only get ugly, I think, because that really is a very, very disgusting story to talk about. But we'll get there, I promise, just because it's going to stay in the news tomorrow and the rest of the week as well. Stay where you are. Drive Time is coming up next with Mike Miller right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. We'll see you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.